Thank you for coming to CastleFiction.com. You are listening to the epic fantasy pod novel, Lion's Last Kill, and this is Chapter 5.
Spotted Patron kneeling over a particularly bright green patch of honey melon plants. Maybe the plants were more green than those in the surrounding patches because they were tended by her. Or maybe he just saw them as greener because everything she did just seemed to make colors brighter. She had added some wonderful colors to his life over the years. He stood over her and she didn't notice a shadow. She just kept digging at the sparse weeds around the melon plants. "Looks like you got some really big cantaloupes there." She stopped digging at the plants and laughed. They were called honey melons here in this world, but they looked like cantaloupes of his world, so that's what he called them. She laughed whenever he called them that because the word cantaloupe didn't exist in their language, but it was very similar to cantaroupe, a particularly distasteful beetle that lived in the dung of large forest creatures. "You slept away the lion's share of the day," she said. She stood up and hugged him in a very long and lingering embrace. He picked up on the hint of what he could have been doing rather than sleeping. "I stopped in to look at you several times this morning, but couldn't bear to wake you," she said. Theirs was a strange relationship. Petra was a very fiercely independent woman. Her father had been a minor lord here in the castle, and had eked out a reasonable existence for his family before Bosch had arrived. That was some 20 years ago, and at that time Petra was only 8. Bosch was 15 years her senior, and sometimes it embarrassed him, but she didn't care. She slipped off her work gloves and pulled the hat back off her head, and it fell onto her back, suspended by a string around her neck. The beautiful brown luster of her hair shone in the sunlight. It was the shade of rich loam, very similar to the earth she worked every day. "I heard you were mounting an expedition to go to the Oracle." Her eyes penetrated him, and he felt flush. "I can't get the machine to work. I'm hoping the Oracle can help me finish it. I need an insight." While she brushed the dirt off her gloves, she continued to stare into his eyes. It wasn't an accusation, just concern, and she learned long ago that he was driven by demons that would not relent until he either vanquished them by doing what he needed to do or died trying. The pause became awkward, and he tried to fathom what she was thinking. It was impossible for him to do. He had cataloged so much information about her with Babbage, but none of it was any use. She was impossible to fathom. He gave up long ago and learned to enjoy her as she was. Her experience of life was different than his. Every day for her was a tactile thing, something she touched gently. Every day for him was a cerebral experience, something he analyzed. But he liked to think that maybe a little bit of her had rubbed off on him. "When will you depart?" He was surprised by this question. In her world, she seldom asked questions about time. She just accepted him when he was there and when he would go. He had come and gone so many times in the past. "We leave morning after tomorrow. Varga is handling all the preparations." The space between her eyes directly over her nose wrinkled in a small frown. "How many men will you take?" "I think we'll be taking about 100. She nodded her head, and that was the end of the questions. She then looked over a garden spot, and walking between the rows, she picked a variety of vegetables and handed them to him. After a few minutes of this, he had both arms full. She started walking, and he followed along beside her. They walked through the gardens, and she exchanged courtesies with other people tending their little plots of garden. Most of them stumbled over themselves to be courteous because of Bosch. They didn't see him often enough to be relaxed when in his presence. Her quarters were plain but tastefully done. Her family, having fared well in the past decades of prosperity, could afford anything they wanted, and most of them lived lavishly, but she preferred to live alone in these comfortable quarters because they were close to the courtyard and the gardens. To call the quarters small would be inaccurate. They were small by the standards of her family's wealth, but they were large for one person, or the occasional two. The main room that they had entered through had a large handmade wooden table and a large carpet on the floor that she had woven herself. The walls were covered with a variety of pastel tapestries that she had also made. Off this main room were several other rooms, including a kitchen, bedroom, a sitting room, dining room, and a small room where she nurtured indoor plants. She led him to the kitchen and he put the vegetables down on a wooden counter. Then she started rummaging around for cooking utensils, and his stomach came awake. He hadn't eaten anything at all, and the hunger rushed at him. The kitchen had been upgraded since the last time he had been in it. He noted the faucet over the sink, and he used it to rinse the vegetables off. Then he grabbed a large knife and started cutting and pruning them. She didn't give him any directions, so he just assumed he would make a salad with most of it. He watched as she put several small logs into the bottom section of the stove and was surprised when they ignited of their own accord. He grunted in curiosity at this, and she shot him a look that said, "Don't ask about the new stove, because your curiosity will force you to take it apart. Then it will be hours before we eat." He shrugged this off. These people were advancing quickly, hot running water in the bathtub, and now self-igniting stoves. He could probably spend weeks with the heads of the various guilds just going over the various improvements they had made. She joined him at the cutting board, and while he prepared the salad, she cut up thin strips of rindfleisch, and after soaking them in a wine sauce, she cooked them in a shallow pan. While he finished up with the salad, he watched her cooking over the stove. She was quietly humming a folk tune, and a thought passed through him like a knife. At this very moment in time, he was happy. It was always like this with her. She talked so very little, yet she said so very much. Just being with her made him happy. They didn't have to be doing anything more than just making a meal, and that was enough. He could walk over to the thread bender right now and dismantle it, throw the pieces into the lake or carry them out in the forest and scatter them. Then he could forget about the woes of the world he came from and just live out the rest of his days here with her. Why should he take on the responsibility of the rest of the world? Why couldn't he just think about himself for once? Couldn't he just think about her for once? This is a subject that they talked about at length on many occasions, but it always came down to the simple stalemate that she was who she was, and he was who he was. And in her worldview, they should just enjoy the time they did spend together. When the room started to fill with the aroma of the sautéed meat, she declared it done, and they set the table and sat down to eat. He tormented his meal with gusto and didn't notice that she hadn't eaten much. Finally, she broached the topic she was thinking about. "I fear something is wrong, that something might happen to you." He stopped eating with a piece of sautéed meat just inches from his mouth. It is a dangerous journey, he said, "but I have embarked on journeys like this before. Fargo will have 100 of his best soldiers with us." Her nose wrinkled again. "That's not what I mean. I mean something is wrong here. There is something going on. There is an undercurrent in the city. I think there may be forces gathering against you, against the king. I have been trying to gain understanding, but I am too close to you. It is difficult for me to learn anything. I have sources among the people, and they have also gotten only hints of something." She put a fork down and just stared at him. This whole topic caught Bosch by surprise. He asked very little of these people. He had no holdings here save a small and modest home, no riches so to speak of, so theft of inheritance wasn't a motive. He brought them to a level of prosperity that their world had never seen, and judging by the pace of things, they were advancing even further on their own now. But the fact that she mentioned this set off an alarm bell inside his head. Well, more than an alarm bell, it set off a gong, a big 6-foot gong, struck by a metal sledgehammer. Being right and being wrong had nothing to do with anything in this world, or in his own world. Facts were often meaningless when dealing with other people. Each person had his own interpretation of the world, and oftentimes there was no way to change that. She wouldn't have brought up the subject unless she was sure that there really was something wrong. Even if she had no facts, she had her intuition. And Bosch trusted that above everything else, and above everyone else. His pulse started pounding and he called up Babbage. "Babbage, make a new file and store this conversation. I need you to start filtering conversations that I have and things I overhear. Look for any clues to something being wrong. Main train of thought for now is assassination attempts. Overthrow of the ruling government and dissatisfaction with the changes made over the last few years to the culture and society. Babbage nodded his head and faded away. He turned to Petra. Do you think it may go as far as an assassination attempt on me or somebody else? He glanced over his shoulder at the words and the prospect of an assassin hiding somewhere in the corner of the room. She didn't answer. They finished the remainder of their meal in silence, and while they were washing the dishes, he told her that he should probably go make some inquiries about this new development. Is there anyone I should be cautious of? He asked her. She stopped her plate washing, and her face grew little wrinkles of concern for him. You should be cautious of everyone. He wouldn't have believed it if it came from anyone else but her. This didn't necessarily mean that he had a trusted friend or someone high in the court that wanted to hurt him or kill him. It just meant that she so far only had clues that something was amiss. If she had more definite information, she would have told him. He put down the dish rag and slipped his arms around her waist. I will be more cautious. This didn't seem to satisfy her, so he added, I will be more cautious of everyone. And while they kissed, he thought to himself, everyone except you, my love. End of chapter 5.